The Mystery of the Lost Lenore, Part 2. I am, and was at the time, of course, in worse physical shape than De Quincey, who once said of his own body that he should almost be ashamed to bequeath his wretched structure to any respectable dog, and so I had no business in traipsing through the less hospitable and more barbarous regions of the globe in search of some rumored lost city. But as I explained in the first part of this narrative, the liquor had gotten the better of me, and promises were made. My companions, my old friend Roger Kohler Lumpsett, and his clubmate Alvaricious C. Ole III, were both seasoned outdoorsmen. I believe it was tarragon and rosemary. And amateur athletes of the kind I despise. I should here clarify that I am opposed, as a general rule, to any frenetic activity that does not result in immediate and sufficient physical or financial reward to warrant my putting down my mug of postum. And so those two gentlemen were in much finer fettle as we rode our ridiculous camels out of the small seaport of Zuleika on that first day. I should perhaps include here a short description of this somewhat less than charming port of call, to flavor this account with a soupçon of what the fops call local color. Here goes. Zuleika is a dirty little port of maybe 2,000 souls, none of which stand the least chance of being saved if the behavior that I witnessed there during our 2 days' sojourn is any indication. Sodom and Gomorrah, this place could give them a run for their money. Alcohol flows freely here, as it is a popular stop amongst sailors. A tumbler of rum can be had in the town's finer drinking establishments, and I use finer here strictly as a comparative, for the equivalent of 45 cents Canadian. The native rum is a thick beverage and must be consumed with a spoon. It packs a considerable wallop. Gambling is all the rage in Zuleika. On any given night, one can wager on cockfights, roach races, mouse wrestling, or badger gymnastics. The locals are very proud, and justifiably so from what I've seen, of the athletic prowess of their wildlife, and are constantly matching the little creatures in tests of strength, agility, speed, and memory. I saw a couple of French sailors lose a few thousand francs, isn't that a lot, betting against the locals that a capuchin monkey named Uncle Wiggles, or something like that I'm translating, could remember all the lyrics to the Ballad of the Green Beret in Esperanto. That's a night I won't soon forget, try as I might. Aside from gambling and heavy drinking, the residents of Zuleika amuse themselves with opening and closing small businesses at an alarming rate. You are not considered normal in Zuleika if you do not have at least 5 failed businesses to your credit by the time you reach 18. Often a Zuleigan will open a business before lunch and close it before dinner. This is especially common on feast days, which occur, as near as I can figure out, every 3rd or 4th day. Feast days are particularly raucous celebrations. Young women parade the streets bearing large containers of the local rum, from which they scoop out generous helpings for passers-by. There is dancing to the hagkala, which is a sort of cross between the accordion and a palm sander. It is also sometimes used in the construction of small wood and camel hair icons to the patron saint of Zuleika, Gus. These look an awful lot like Richard Nixon, for some unexplained reason. What with the dancing, gambling, drinking, and general carrying on, I was inclined to stay there, but my companions could not be dissuaded from their desire to find Lenore. And so on the 3rd day, having hired some camels and some native guides, we headed inland. Inland from Zuleika is almost straight uphill. Only the lower slopes of these foothills, called the Upsy-Daisy Range, once again I'm translating, are covered in vegetation, mostly potentillas, very small lime trees, with which the natives make a delicious Cuba Libre, and a variety of interesting grasses, most of which the locals dry and smoke to no good effect. As one ascends into the higher regions, everything becomes drier and colder and more sparse. It is most unpleasant. Our primary guide, a man called Hobie, was raised in these foothills and is as pleasant as you might expect. I tried engaging him in conversation several times to no avail. I noticed sometime later that he always wore those little earbud headphone deals, and so that might explain part of it. One of the other guides, a much friendlier chap named Sammy, told me that Hobie was an enormous Ethel Merman fan and could often slip into a kind of rarefied trance while listening to her. Sammy, my personal favorite amongst the guides, was actually from Fanestel, but had lived so long around Zuleiga that he was considered a local. He was an easygoing chap who was none too interested in hard work or excessive exertion. He was always pressing Roger and Alvy to take frequent breaks for the camels. I loved him for it. Our third and final guide was an evil-looking man named Rutiga. He had few discernible teeth and a nasty-looking scar that ran from the right side of his chin down to his left scapula. I don't even want to think about how he got it. I stayed away from him. Alvy seemed to need to toady up to him, but it was gratifying to see Rutiga roughly shake his head at Alvy's offers of a drink from his canteen or a sesame snap. The six of us were heading up the mountain silently on the fourth morning out of Zuleiga when the strangest thing happened.